Hi, I'm Bess Godin, and welcome to Millennial Splaining. So, I bet you're wondering, who is this bitch? Who died and made her the ultimate authority to speak for her entire generation? Well, the answer is, I'm nobody. I have no authority whatsoever. Like so many millennials, I was told to get an education. Then, I graduated into a barren and opportunity-less economy. We are the most overeducated and underemployed. The greatest minds of my generation go unheard. They are too busy serving coffee, flipping burgers, moving boxes, babysitting, and pumping gas to survive. All the while applying to better jobs that they are also overqualified for, but for which they know they'll never get an interview. And finally, at the end of a long day, we have time not to relax, but to work on our blogs and YouTube channels so we can have some modicum of expression in a world where we are told daily that we are disposable. And with each of these desperate efforts to grab hold of the national microphone, we find ourselves slipping further and further away from it because the world doesn't want to hear our problems. By corporate reinforced choice, we are a generation lost in obscurity.
Oregon Trail generation, and I can take it all, leave it each time. I belong to the Oregon Trail generation, and I can take it all, leave it each time. We love our avocado toast, but student loan, that's what we got the most. We were sold a bogus bill of goods, and now we're fighting for crumbs like they knew we would. And I belong to the Oregon Trail generation, and I can take it or leave it each time. I belong to the generation, and I can take it or leave it each time. We played the Oregon Trail on the computer. Little did we know we were planning for our future. We may not die of dysentery with a broken arm, but the climate's collapsing and no one's alarmed. And I belong to the Oregon Trail generation, and I can take it or leave it each time. I belong to the Oregon Trail generation, and I can take it or leave it each time.
Hi, Ron. Thank you so much for joining me on Millennial Splaining.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. I really appreciate you coming on. This is awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of your work for a while. And one of the things that struck me about your musical career is that you had a song called The Oregon Trail Generation. That was a song that you and I feel that it is extremely appropriate. It's pretty, you know, I would say pretty spot on for
Thank you.
Yeah,
thanks. I mean, I don't really have a music career. I just kind of like have been lucky enough to incorporate music into some of the stuff I do. But yeah, I mean, that was a fun one. I mean, Oregon Trail was the Oregon Trail generation was trending on Twitter one day. And I just thought that was such a goofy thing, especially since ironically enough, I mean, I know we're both millennials based on the title of your show. Like, Oregon Trail actually predates our generation. I mean, the Gen Xers were on it too and stuff like that. Right. So it's not exclusive to millennials. I guess maybe it was just really, you know, in its peak during our generation or whatever. So I got a big kick out of it. And, you know, of course, I like, you know, Richard Hell and the Blank Generation. So I thought that'd be a fun little, you know, spoof to make. So
I loved it. Thank you. And if you play music and you play music publicly, you have a music career, so don't even.
You're very generous. Thank you.
Seriously, like, you know, the people who, you know, you have to start out as a huckster until you get somewhere, right? You know what I mean? Like, you got to sell yourself. So
yeah.
Right. Anyway, and your music is excellent. It's not, you know, just, you know, I have 12 years of vocal training, so I know what I'm talking about. Your music is excellent.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you to say. I mean, I just kind of have fun and use it in a fun way. And it's not, you know, it's I enjoy it. I mean, I love music as a fan. Like, I'm a big music fan. So, you know, it's cool to be able to incorporate, you know, that love, you know, so.
Yeah. Awesome. And one of the things I first noticed about you on
Jimmy show is I saw an old episode of you wearing a Op Ivy t-shirt, and I
yeah. Well, I'm wearing a band t-shirt right now. I'm wearing a Chase Petra. I think it's Chase Petra, actually, is how you pronounce it. But they're a punk band out of Long Beach. And I know we're pre-recording this, but I saw them last night. They opened for Mike Watt at the harbor, like at this brewery here in Pedro, like right on the docks. It was pretty cool. It was really cool. You know, Mike Watt crushed it. He's a legend, and they were a really good band. I really enjoyed them, so I was like, I'm gonna support the cause. I'll get a t-shirt, you know. And they're a punk band out of Long Beach.
Cool. Everybody go check them out.
Yeah,
I will too, because I haven't heard them.
Do it. Yeah, they're good. Yeah. It's funny, I was kind of buzzed, and I feel like you know, I was kind of far away from the stage, so I couldn't see the band super well, but they had two, you know, the guitarist and bassist, they were women, and the drummer was a guy. So, the person doing the merch was a guy. So I just kind of assumed he was the drummer, you know, and I was kind of like, you know, I was kind of buzzed, and you know, so I was just like, I was like, oh, are you the drummer? And he's like, no. And I was like, okay. And I don't know. I don't know if it was an awkward conversation or if I'm just wondering if it was. But anyway, I bought a t-shirt.
You know, I mean, there aren't a lot of women drummers. That's just the reality. So, you know, I possibly would have made the same assumption. You don't have to feel too bad about it.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, I mean, it was like, yeah, but I guess he was just a merch guy. And there's there are some killer women drummers out there. I mean, I know there's the woman from the White Stripes comes to mind, and then of course, mm-hmm. like Slater Kenny.
Yeah.
So yeah, but yeah, it was two girls and a guy in this band, and they're really good. They're a good band.
Yeah, cool. Rock on. Cool. So let's talk a little bit about your movie trailer. I saw it. It was excellent. Obviously based on what happened in, what was it, January? The meme stocks thing?
Yeah, it happened in January.
Yeah. So we're going to show the trailer now and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. I'm going to propose.
Shut up. God, I hope Sarah says yes, man. That would be shocking.
Well, the whole thing's been shocking. As an outsider, like, the first time I saw you with her, I was like, you know what I mean? You look like you won a reality show. And she's, you know, I'm happy. Because I didn't think there was any way this would last this long.
Thanks. I'm a writer. My more successful brother, he's on Wall Street. I don't know how it happened.
So, how is Don?
He's Don.
It's Tiffany. They want to meet up tonight. Don has some exciting news.
Tell him to send the cliff notes to whogivesashit@gmail.com.
John, come on. He's your brother.
Not my call.
He wouldn't understand.
You wouldn't understand.
The whole thing with Wall Street, John, is how complicated it is, okay? Like, we're going to short sell Game Bites, but to you, you wouldn't understand.
You know, I bet I would.
John, I just can't anymore. Save your drama for the page. I just can't.
What are you saying?
I think we need a break.
Awesome. No girlfriend. No work, no agent. Is this rock bottom? We're gonna do a short sell. You wouldn't understand. By the way, short selling, not that difficult. In a video game store, that's a pretty safe bet. The only way that could go wrong is if... is if... Game Bites. We need to buy shares of it.
What? Why?
Bunch of hedgers are trying to short sell it. We all buy shares. That drives the price up. Then, when they go to pay up, it's worth more than what they paid for it. We win, they lose.
You know, they always say if you can't beat them, join them. They never say join them to beat them. Time to beat them at their own game.
You're really passionate about this.
It's personal.
We'll start buying slowly. We've got some big names involved, too. By the time the markets close, it should be at least double the price.
I'll be able to pay for my surgery.
I'll be able to knock out all that student loan debt.
If we pull this off, it'll only be the beginning. They'll fear us because they'll have to. And you know what destroys a market?
Fear. Let's do this.
It takes a really complex idea and it personalizes it to the point where you really want to pay attention to it. And I feel like that's one of the struggles that we have on the left, is like really trying to get people to understand these more complex issues. Because I thought when the meme stocks thing happened that it could have been a really good way, you know, for eventually for like maybe, you know, workers co-ops to start taking back some of the stock of their own companies and stuff like that. You know, I mean, like I thought that that precedent, like the way that it happened, the fact that it happened on Reddit and that it was a bunch of people who didn't know each other previously. And they also sort of like crowdsourced this idea was, you know, I mean, really powerful. Definitely something that, you know, we could replicate from an activist standpoint. So I thought it was really cool that you personalized that by having a brother that represented everything that's wrong about Wall Street. And I thought it was also hilarious. You made him extremely misogynistic. So appropriate. Definitely. He's very Wolf of Wall Street. I see it.
Yeah. I mean, and again, like it is just like based off of what happened. Like it is a fictional story that, you know, we're using to kind of like explain, you know, like how something like that was possible. But yeah, I mean, I give that disclaimer because like, I've already gotten some people who are just like, well, I don't think the Reddit room, I don't think they were actually like that. Like, look, it's a fictional story. I'm not, you know, like I'm not implying that there was a socialist writer in Hollywood who was the brains behind all of it. It's a fake story. It's just loosely based on something that happened. That's what loosely based on means. So yeah. So yeah. And I just think in general, I've always wanted to do more scripted content. Like it's been a goal of mine for years now. And I just kind of thought, I'm like, well, now's the time. Like now's the time to start. So I just started, you know, like everyone else in LA, I have a bunch of pilots that have, you know, never seen the light of day that I've written and, you know, just trying to sell. But for this thing, it was like, well, I can actually make an indie film with this. I wrote it in a way that it would be pretty easy to produce. You know, there's no crazy car chases or anything like that. So, yeah. So we made a trailer, showing the movie that we want to make and hopefully we'll get this thing funded and make the movie. So.
Awesome. Well, if I had any money at all, I'd give it to you for this.
Thank
but
you.
I strongly encourage anybody watching to go donate as well, because this movie is excellent. And honestly, you know, movies are how we get these ideas out, right? You know, I mean, like mm-hmm. My girlfriend is really into, you know, the climate crisis and stuff like that. And the way that she, you know, talks about these things and the way that she, you know, perceives being, you know, preparedness and like what we could use is she looks at disaster movies. Right.
Sure.
This kind of idea, you know, it's excellent to reimagine and then keep reimagining and reimagining so that, you know, it becomes, you know, part of our toolbox as activists, right? Like, you know, activism is not just marching in the streets. Activism is also making art and making film, making comedy, making music. You know, I mean, these are all equally as important. And I don't think we should discount that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those things. There's a lot of things you can kind of say in the context of a film or a TV show. Or like a cartoon even. And yeah, that's kind of like, we've had a lot of fun, you know, doing that in this trailer and then, you know, in the film. I mean, a lot of the film is like explainer. So it's just this guy just giving his take on it, like giving his take on Wall Street, giving his take on the world and how they're going to try to do this thing online and then how it all kind of came about. And I'll just let people know. I mean, there's a lot of perks too for anyone who does donate. Like they're like we offer behind the scenes footage that we'll email people. Like as we're making the movie, there's like a virtual screening and a Q&A with the cast that we're gonna have after. And you get your name in the credits if you give a certain amount. And everybody who gives also gets a personalized thank you on my podcast, Get Your News On with Ron. So we have perks and so yeah, if people check out the trailer and you got a little bit to spare, it is very much appreciated because we're gonna make. I mean, yeah, I'm pretty excited. I can't wait to make this thing and yeah, that's you know,
awesome. Well, I'm really excited to see it. I can't wait. And you know, let's put it out there. Let's make it happen.
Oh yeah, you know.
Yeah. So so I thought it would be kind of fun to go through like some general myths about millennials. Okay. I'm an elder millennial. I'm 35. I assume that you're around my age.
Yeah. We're pretty much the same age. I'm 36. So I beat you by a little bit, but yeah, we're both elder millennials.
It's okay. You'll die before me. So it's fine. Sorry. That was a complete joke. Actually, I'm going to die first. I know it because I smoked cigarettes for a long time.
Well, you know, it's like, what's that phrase? Like, I'm here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah.
I feel like, I mean, that might be the case for all of us, no matter what, when you look at the climate. But yeah, I kind of think in many ways that that's sort of applicable to be, although I'd like to be here for both. I'd like to be here for a good, I'm definitely here for a good time. I'd like to be here for a long time too, because I think the world, despite all of its flaws, I think the world is a pretty amazing place, you know, and I like, this is such a cliche, but I guess in the past year and a half, I'm really realizing it. Like I really dig life. Like I really like it. Like there's just, I love so many, and it really makes you appreciate, it really makes you appreciate just all the things that compose of, you know, comprise your life, because it's like, you know, we have a year and a half and I use present tense because, you know, this thing's still not over yet. And who knows what's going to happen a month from now even, but, you know, we've had all this time to really still find purpose and still find joy and still find, you know, whatever in it. And it's like, I've been able to do that. I know some people have really struggled with that and that really sucks, but you know, I've been able to, cause it's like, for me, it's like when I wake up and my wife and my cat are there, it's like, well, that's just, you know, I mean, that's everything, you know what I mean? And it's just like, yeah, it sucks that my wife and I haven't gone on a honeymoon yet because of the pandemic, but we will. And there's a hell of a lot worse things in the world than, oh, we have to wait on our honeymoon. You know, there's it is breaking my heart not being able to perform as much. It is breaking my heart that, I mean, hopefully we're going to be on the road this fall, but it's not guaranteed that we will. We might not be. I mean, you know, like we might have to cancel again, and it would break my heart if that happens. That's like 2 years in a row where like pretty much my favorite thing to do. And also, you know, a big part of how I make my living is just kaput, you know, it's just gone. It's just not a thing. And when we thought it was going to be, it's not like we planned on, oh, we're not going to tour. Like we canceled an entire year's worth of tour dates in 2020. Cause we had it booked ahead of time. And, you know, we booked a tour for 2021 thinking that fall was a safe bet. And here we are, might not have been a safe bet. So, and that's heartbreaking, but I'm just like, well, someday it's going to be a thing again. I mean, I guess I don't even know when at this point, but someday it'll be back. And when it is, you know, I can't wait to get back out there completely. And in the meantime, everything I can do, I'll just cherish that much more. You know, I mean, I've been able to do some stand up and I, you know, you just cherish it that much more. So.
Well, good for you. That's an excellent attitude to have. A lot of people are struggling to find any positivity in the world right now. So that was kind of beautiful. Thank you for saying that.
Well, thanks. I have my moments. I think we all do, but you know, I try to focus on the things you can do instead of the things you can't, and just kind of focus on the things that are, you know, the most important in that, you know, so I really try hard to do that. There are days where I want to pull my hair out. I think we all have those. I mean, all the time, but especially now. But yeah. But you know, I really do try to make the effort, and I think that's all people can do right now.
Yeah, for sure. Well said. Well, that's kind of why I started this podcast too, because I had been planning to, you know, I had been writing articles, and I have a lot more, you know, in my notes than I have actually published anywhere. But, you know, I have been planning to sort of speak out about a lot of things for a while now. And I just was never in a financial position to do it. And I'm finally in a place where, you know, I'm still always late on my rent. I'm still always juggling bills, but at least like I'm not worried about being evicted. At least I'm not worried about where my food's coming from. And so that's like a new plateau of safety for me. So thank God. So, you know, I figured, you know, I can't keep it in anymore. I have these opinions and I'm just going to I'm going to shit them out and we'll see what happens. You know, I can't. So, yeah. So anyway, so it's always bugged me that, you know, we have been painted a certain way by the media. I feel like we never were able to have the space to form our own sort of culture, right? Like our own subculture. Like if you think like Gen X is the punk movement, you think like, you know, the boomers have hippies and disco, like, you know, the beat movement was a immediate predecessor to the hippies as well, right? So, you know, these are subcultures that I think we had in some way, but were never properly like represented by us. We were never, you know, they were always just sort of like categorized in clickbait articles from like news, you know, news stations that needed 24-hour news tidbits here and there, right? So like, you know, if you think about millennials, you think about like, you know, you're lazy, you're entitled, you are maybe wear like a slouchy hat, I Googled and went through a list. I relied on this BuzzFeed article. I figured BuzzFeed of all of the news outlets would have the skinny on millennials. So I came up with a list of, millennial myths. And I thought that we could play a game. Who was a better millennial? And then bust these myths as we talk about.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So the first question number one, ding, ding, ding. Here we go. Do you eat avocado toast?
I don't.
No,
avocado toast. No,
thank you. Me neither. So
you know,
we
I live in that. I don't know where you live, and you don't have to answer that if you don't want to. But I live in California, and where'd you say?
New Jersey.
Okay, I love places, so I'm always like intrigued, like where people are out of. Like it's you know, I mean, I love to travel again, and so I'm always intrigued, like where people are at. So cool.
I'm a Jersey girl.
You're a Jersey girl. We used to go to Wildwood for family vacation all the time. Cause nice. I grew up in Pittsburgh. So that was, okay. That was one of the closer beaches to us. So we would go to Wildwood a lot. And then I haven't spent like a ton of time in Jersey, but I've been to like Asbury Park and what's it? River Walk or River, whatever it is.
Okay.
Yeah. What's the town I'm thinking of? The town near Asbury, but I want to say River's in the title, or it starts with an R. Redwood. Am I thinking Redwood?
Maybe.
All right. Well, So I've been around there. I've been around because I'm a big Springsteen.
I haven't been much around there, as you might really? Be able
to. Oh, okay. I'm a big Springsteen nut, so like I had to go all around. Like I had to go to Asbury and stuff, and I've performed in Asbury before, and it was kind of like performing in Asbury, but yeah. Hey. So
at the Stone Pony?
No, I wish. No, it was actually at Asbury Lanes, which is also a very legendary venue in its own right. So it's not quite as big as the Stone Pony, but yeah, it was years ago. It was just like a comedy show I did a guest set on, but it was sort of like, yeah, I'm in Asbury Park. And so
rock on.
Yeah.
Rock on for sure. Yeah, I saw Springsteen in concert once. I'm not personally a Springsteen fan. My dad was a huge Springsteen fan, though. So I know more about Springsteen than I ever wanted to.
Is that a requirement when you live in Jersey? Because everyone I know from Jersey has that same story where they're like, yeah, I'm not really that into him, but my parents freaking love him. And I'm like, my parents love him and I love him. Like I love Bruce Springsteen. I love his music. I love what he's all about. You know, I mean, I like what he's all about, like in theme. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say it didn't hurt a little bit when he was podcasting with Obama, you know?
Yeah.
But I didn't, well, but I don't.
That's kind of why I don't like Bruce Springsteen, because he started out as, you know, like a voice for, you know, the white working class, I guess. Right. And then once he got money, it just got way worse from there. And that's when I was old enough to know anything about him. So, sure. You know, that's my perception.
Well, here's my thing, and I'm not like trying to like, I mean, you know, you don't have to like Bruce Springsteen, it's fine, and I'm certainly not trying to like Bruce Springsteen doesn't need me to run defense for him, but like my take on that is like I don't think Bruce Springsteen is podcasting with Obama because he's a big fan of the drone strikes. You know what I mean? Like I don't think he's like, yeah, man, I really dig neoliberalism. Like, I think Springsteen is a guy who does have a good heart, who genuinely does, you know, want to make the world a better place, you know, who has his take on things. And he's not, you know, someone who's, I doubt he's spending a ton of bandwidth just thinking about our political situation night and day. So he's just kind of one of those like, well, yeah, the Democrats are gonna try to help people, the Republicans aren't. I don't agree with that assessment, but I don't think, I mean, I agree with the Republicans sure as hell aren't, but the Democrats aren't either. That's, you know, like, but I certainly don't, he's not coming from an ill place. So to me, it's like, that's, you know, I don't like, I didn't freak out or cancel Bruce Springsteen. You know, I live in a country where I am very much a political outcast. Like, politically, I'm very much an outcast. So I'm more interested in trying to make that not the case. Like try to make more people kind of see the world the way lefties do, and that, you know, like the time is now for socialism. You know, like I'd rather make more people see that than just, you know, dwell on the fact that it's like, well, not everyone quite sees the world the way I do in the country where I live, or any other country for that matter, but, you know, like even more so here. You know, so I can't, like, I don't impose these strict, rigid rules on, like, bands and musicians where it's like, well, if you don't mirror me, you know, like, I cancel you. I mean, if somebody's, like, just, you know, spewing hate speech or something like that, obviously that's a different story. But, you know, if your intentions are genuine, I don't, you know, like that's okay.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, I'm fans of musicians who are lefties. I'm fans of musicians who are a little more like just regular Democrats who mean well, but, you know, just whatever. I'm fans of musicians who are libertarians, you know, like it's not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of the band Cracker. That guy's a big libertarian. You know, it's I still enjoy the music.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that for sure. I mean, I'm not here to cancel Bruce Springsteen either. I hate Bruce because he was shoved down my throat when I was a kid.
I get it. Yeah. No,
that's why every kid in my generation is like, oh, Bruce Springsteen, because he was on every radio station.
Well, it's funny, when I went to Asbury, it was with a colleague of mine from grad school. We were both in grad school in Pittsburgh, and he was from Jersey. And so, like, I booked this show, and then we drove up together, and then I took like a bus back or something, because it was like during a semester break. So we had this fun like road trip, and I was all like, dude, Springsteen. And he's like, yeah, I don't listen to Springsteen. My dad freaking loves him. And so that was his story too. And then when he was showing me around, he like showed me like the river. There's a really cool Springsteen song called The River. And he goes, yeah, so this is that in that song. And I'm like, oh my God, it's the freaking river. And I'm like taking pictures on my phone and shit. And he just was like kind of indulging me, because he's like you. He's like, yeah, dude, I've just had this shoved down my throat my entire freaking life, so I don't like Springsteen. And but I was around Springsteen all the time too, and I do love him. So I don't know. I'm sure there's some millennials that are also Jersey people that are Springsteen fans.
Oh, definitely. They are. They're here. I know them. I'm just not one.
I feel you. But yeah, I do not eat avocado toast. And the reason I mentioned California, like, avocado is so everywhere here. And I enjoy avocado, but like, I feel like in California, we take it to the extreme, where we just avocado is just so in your face. And when avocado is on something, oh, it is on it. Like, it is not often where you just get a nice like thin slice. That's kind of what I like just a nice thin slice to complement a sandwich or something. Like, no, it is a thick freaking mound most of the time.
Oh man,
so, so I do not eat avocado toast. I don't care for it. And you know what's funny? The only time I ever saw a person order avocado toast in my life, it was a boomer.
Yes, thank you. So this is my theory about avocado toast. This is my theory. I think that in some, you know, like I said, I believe that the media looked at us from the outside and then categorized us, right? So they also looked at the millennials that they had around them, right? Which were probably their privileged kids. So their privileged kids were sort of echoing what the rest of us were doing, right? So maybe, and I don't know, like, are avocados expensive out there or really cheap? They're probably cheap, right?
Yeah, because they're a little less expensive because there's so many of them. But everything is expensive in California. So it might kind of balance out. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because here they're expensive. So like the fact that we would be able to afford avocados and bread, which, you know, went from when I was a kid, it was like $1.50 for a loaf of bread. And now it's like $4.
Right.
So that's ridiculous. So the fact that I would, you know, waste a good piece of toast on putting avocado on it just sounds ridiculous to me. Like, I would make a fucking sandwich, but whatever. But that's the other thing. Like, if I was supposedly eating avocados because they were cheaper, a bag of tortilla chips is $1 to $2.50. Right. Mm-hmm. So it actually makes more sense for me to be eating tortilla chips and avocados, right? If supposedly that's why I'm doing it.
And that makes no
sense to me. Cause it sounds like a poor person's meal, right? Like that's how they pass it off. It's like, that's why it's cool, because it's healthy and also, you know, cheap or something.
Well, listen, I thought the thing was, it makes like, we're so fancy. Like we're like, that's the reason, like the reason we don't have houses in 401ks isn't because of a collapsing job market. And it isn't because of a collapsing society. It's because we need to have our fancy avocado toast and our Starbucks. Oh. Isn't that kind of the thing that the media does?
Oh, that's a good, yeah.
I thought that was their angle with it. I mean, I could be wrong, but yeah.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Okay, so that maybe makes sense then. And it also makes sense why nobody that I know or you know has ever actually seriously eaten it.
I've never seen, seriously, it's a friend of mine and she's a boomer and she ordered it once.
Uh-huh.
And, And she did give me a little sliver of it. She's like, you got to try this. It's so good. And I'm like, it's just toast with avocado on it. And she's like, come on. And I'm like, all right. It was imposed on me, this avocado toast. I didn't even want it. But yeah.
Wow. Rock on. All right. Well, this was an excellent debunking. Check. Next question. How about participation trophies? Did you receive participation trophies when you were young?
I mean, I'm trying to think of like everything. I'm trying to think of like soccer and baseball and swimming. And because I was on the swim team when I was a kid, and then I played soccer and I played baseball. Like I quit baseball to do swimming. Like swimming became my summer activity because I never really liked baseball. I don't think I did. I think the closest I ever had to that was we would do this thing in school. I don't know if you had this in grade school, but we would have the grade school Olympics where we would just do, I mean, we would do all the, they probably don't even do it anymore now to tell you the truth for like kids or whatever, but like we would do tug of war and we would do potato sack races and we would do just like general marathons, like passing the baton, doing a marathon. And we would do, what were some of the other events? Like a water balloon toss, because it was like, it was closer to summer when we would do it. It was a lot of fun. And there would be like gold medal and silver medal and bronze medals. So you had to actually win to get something. So I don't know. But the reason I think that might be close is like, if your some of the events was like the entire class participated, like in tug of war and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if you won, I mean, even if you had nothing to do with said victory, you still got the gold medal if you're, you know, class one or whatever.
I think it's more though, they're like participation trophies for when you're young, like when you're in, you know, like primary school, you know, like, like there were ever a competition, everyone would get a certificate. Do you feel like you had that experience maybe?
I'm trying to remember for sure, like, cause when I'm thinking about it, there might've been like a thing in the Olympics where like everybody just got like a ribbon saying like, hey, Olympics, but it wasn't a trophy. It was just like a ribbon acknowledging that the thing was happening and you were in it, you know? So I don't think I've ever gotten a participation trophy. I don't think I've ever gotten that. I feel like that actually is kind of more of a thing after us.
I
think if that is a thing at all, it might not be. I mean, I don't have kids, so I don't know. But like, but I think like that was more like you'd hear about. I mean, you heard that one thing where Greg, there was a player who used to play for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I only saw this because like, you know, people I grew up with were like sharing this article, but it was like this football player who's retired now, and his kid got a participation trophy for something and he thought that was bullshit and he made his kid return it. And it like, and it was like in the news. It's like just some stupid story. And like, like, but that kid's not a millennial. Like that kid's too young to be a millennial. Yeah. So I feel like that's more, there's some people who still say millennial and they're referring to anyone who is younger than them really. So they're referring to like kids now, even though it's like a new generation. So yeah, well, I don't think that was actually us.
Well, I don't know. I disagree. I particularly remember that being a slander that was made against us.
It was a slander made against us, but I don't think it's accurate.
Yeah, I did actually. I don't know if it's because I was extremely not physical as a child or whatever, but I do remember getting participation trophies, though they were not actually trophies. They were like certificates or ribbons, like you said, like not necessarily like a whole fucking, you know, trophy. But, you know, interestingly, see, like, I think, you know, my point is like, if you had ever gotten that, would it make you feel good?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I ever cared. Cause like the closest thing to that I ever got, it was just sort of like an acknowledgement You know, and I feel like they've always had and does that.
Feel better? Like, does that make you feel like I participated? Beat you.
Yeah, no. It didn't make you feel anything. You were just happy to not be in school.
Right.
You're just happy to be, you know, like having fun outside instead of in class. And you knew summer was coming. So that's all you cared about. I mean, yeah, I guess it was pretty cool. Like if your class won the tug of war and you got the gold medal. And there was one, it might have been a potato sack race or something. I think one year I won the silver medal. I came in second. And I don't know why. I mean, I wasn't like totally not athletic at all. Like I was very average. Like I was like, I wasn't the first person picked for the kickball team, but I wasn't the last either. I was just kind of like in between, and I did okay, you know, like I wasn't terrible. I wasn't great. I was just, you know, pretty whatever. And I wasn't, you know, cause I wasn't very tall. I wasn't very big. I was just sort of like, meh. But yeah, I think one year in one event, I won like the silver medal, and I was like, oh man, I won the silver medal. And when we had intramurals, like later, like I did like intramurals where it's like, you just have like, you pick teams and you just have like a little sports league. You know, I was kind of okay at soccer. Like I wasn't bad at it. And so there were a couple times where I was one of the MVPs of the game. Like I was like, they had three MVPs and I was one of them on a handful of games.
Nice. Good for you.
You know, I mean,
so either you never had a participation trophy because you win and stuff. That's why.
I don't know if I'd go that far. My team, when you are in eighth grade, you get to like pick your own team and you get to have your own team and you get to give it a name. And I was such a geek. I thought it'd be real funny. My team was called the Christina Ricci's because I had a really big crush on Christina Ricci.
That is awesome. Oh my God. I would want to be on Christina Ricci's team.
We weren't Absolutely. Very good, unfortunately. I didn't do a good job picking my team, but
then I would have been on it.
I tried to like motivate them and stuff, and we just kind of we just weren't that good. But yeah, we were called the Christina Ricci's, and yeah, like my poster was really, really dumb and cheesy. Like it was like just her name with a bunch of hearts all around it. and then like a picture of her, like it was kind of, I mean, I was a kid, I was like 12, give me a break, you know. But yeah, I had a big crush on Christina Ricci, which is kind of funny now because like when I was 12, she would have been like, I guess 17 or something, because she's not that much older than us.
Yeah.
But when you're a kid and it's a movie star who's like older than you, they seem like this, like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, but it's like, but then it's like, as you get older, you're like, oh yeah, we're pretty much like the same age.
Yeah. No. It's weird. Yeah, like that too. And like, yeah, there's a lot of people that are like, oh.
Well, the gap's just closed too. Like,
She's an adult, Dakota Fanning. She's like an adult now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right.
I think so. That sounds right. Yeah. Oh. But yeah, I mean, yeah, so it's weird. It's like as you get older, like all that stuff just, you know, like even people growing up, like remember when you're a kid, like 2 years seems like a lifetime. That person, I mean, if you're 11 and they're 13, they have life figured out. Holy shit, they're a teenager. But now, like, you know, if I'm 36 and someone's 34 or someone's 38, like we're the same freaking age. Like, you're right. Kidding? Like we're the same age. Like.
Yeah, it definitely matters less as you get on, but you know.
Yeah, got more years under your belt.
Yeah, that's because we're not in school anymore. So I just wanted to add in real quick my take on participation trophies, because again, I did receive a few of them and it never made me feel good about myself. Let me just say that. Because if you receive a participation trophy, that means that you didn't win. That means you didn't get a trophy for a real reason, right? So that means that you're literally being handed like a piece of shame. So for the children, it's stupid. For the parents, it makes sense because there's a lot of parents that go, why didn't my kid get a trophy? Burr, 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 burr. Right. So teachers do it out of self-defense. Okay. So I know this because my mom was a teacher.
Oh, and she told you that? See, that's interesting because they use it as a way to like kind of throw shade at our generation. Meanwhile, it was actually to appease theirs.
Exactly. That is my point. That is my point. So participation trophies are about you guys, not us. Fuck you. So moving on. We have, let's see. Do you want to do student debt? You have student debt.
Technically, yes, but I got my student loan debt through marriage, which is the best way to get it. Let me tell you, folks, that's the best way. I'm sure my wife wouldn't mind if I say that. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I have student loan debt, but it was not my own. I was very lucky because, you know, I was not, you know, my family's not rich by any means, but they are academics. So my dad is a professor. My mom is a research assistant. So from the moment I was born, college was something you saved for.
Right.
You know, like, and it was just something, you know, I mean, it's funny, like when I was a kid, when I would get like holiday money, you know, like presents or whatever, my dad would take that and he would save it. Not all of it. I mean, he'd let me have some of it to just go buy, you know, whatever, like a CD or something. But CDs, by the way, for all you younger folks. But but he would save a lot of it for college. And at the time, I didn't like that. You know, that kind of made me mad. I'm like, I just want to take my money and do something stupid with it. But now I'm so thankful that that was such a priority. And also, like, universities, a lot of times, like, there are benefits where they help with tuition. For, you know, the kids of the, you know, employees and the faculty and stuff. So between all those things, I was able to get out of undergrad without any student loan debt. And, you know, like I worked a summer job and helped pay for college that way. And so there were a number of things that, you know, like you add it all up and we were able to cover tuition. I had very little student loan debt. I think it was like $1,000 or something. So it was, you know, which is not a lot of debt compared to what other people have. So I was able to knock that out. And then in grad school, I got funding. So I had an assistantship and all that stuff. So I didn't have any debt in grad school either. My wife was not as fortunate. So I do have student loan debt, but it's by marriage. I mean, what are you gonna do? Like, it's, you know.
Oh, that's awesome. So yeah, and what was your master's degree in again? It's media related, right? I want to
communication. Communication. And yeah, I mean, it was, I'm glad I did it. I really enjoyed graduate school. I don't really use my degree, at least not in like the literal sense, you know. I mean, I taught community college for a little bit, but
cool.
I haven't in a long time, and I doubt I ever will again. I mean, I enjoy teaching, but I mean, at this point, that kind of chapter of my life is pretty closed, I think. And I guess never say never. I mean, it could open up again in a different context, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. Do you have student loan debt?
Classes? I'm signing up. Rumpelcone comedy classes. I'm signing up. I don't know.
Yeah, that's actually a controversial topic in the comedy world is stand-up comedy classes. Like, some people are very adamantly against them, and other people are like swear by them. I'm in neither camp. My personal take is, you know, a class is only going to prepare you so much. Like, you have to just get on stage and do it. Like, that's what stand-up comedy is. You have to just do it. So if people, and people have asked my opinion before on this, where they're like, should I take a class? Shouldn't I? And it's like, look, the only person who can really answer that is you, because, you know, for some people that class enabled them to get on stage. So who am I to say that classes are bullshit just because I didn't really need that to start doing stand-up? So what I tell people, I'm like, look, if you have a lot of stage fright and you feel like without that class, you're not going to get on stage, then that class will probably help you. if you're already getting on stage, you might not need a comedy class. And I would encourage you to just get on stage as much as you can. And if you feel like you might benefit from it, by all means, try it. But really, you know, in my experience, you know, the only way to really start doing stand-up is just to physically do it and write material and get on stage at an open mic and try. So, cool. So that's my personal take on it. You know, like cool. if you can go to an open mic all on your own and you're not too scared to get up there and you can just jump in the deep end and try it, you probably don't need a class. But, you know, if that's not the case, maybe it would help you.
Yeah. I used to do theater. That was my undergrad.
Nice.
And luckily I don't have any loans left from my undergrad either because of my parents. But and my grandparents who helped save for me. But after they passed away, I got severe PTSD and I did not want to perform live anymore. I performed live a lot. I was doing theater since I was 8. And I, you know, did it up until I graduated college. So it was a lot and I'm done. And this is like a step for me. That's why I'm not even doing live streams at this point. Like just even doing pre-recorded with you and other people that are like, you know, even somewhat famous compared to me. Like I, you know, this is a step for me, honestly, it's ridiculous. But yeah, but I know a lot of people who do improv and stuff in New York. And, you know, I have a friend who does Upright Citizens Brigade. So, you know, it was suggested to me at the time when I graduated that I should do Upright Citizens Brigade, but not as a way to like develop my skills necessarily, because I already had those skills from college. Well, from my whole, you know, experience, I guess, doing theater, but more so as a way of getting to know people and getting connections and then getting started,
sure.
Oh, you know, yeah. And stuff. So
that's kind of a different area. I mean, stand up and improv and theater are all very different crafts. And I think in improv, I think that classes and workshops are infinitely valuable and necessary in improv, because it's just a different type of comedy, you know, and you have to feed off each other and you have to learn how to develop those skills and how to, you know, take a scene in a certain direction and what your choices are and aren't. So I think classes are very valuable there. I mean, same with acting. I mean, I took, before the pandemic, I took an acting class in LA every week, you know, and I freaking loved it. I realized all the things I was doing wrong. You know, I realized, oh, this is why I wasn't getting very many callbacks. I was doing everything fucking wrong.
Yeah,
this was, you know, like my class was very much LA focused. Like it was like, this is how you're going to work in LA. And and it was very helpful, you know, so.
Yeah, you definitely need to know the format at the very least, you know, like there's definitely a format to auditioning and, you know, getting your headshots out there and what have you. But yeah, again, it's been, I don't know, wow, 15 years, I guess, since I've even thought about theater anymore. Oh, what do
well,
I know?
You never know. But you might want to jump back in. You never know.
We'll see. You know, like I said, this is my first step towards being, you know, in public again, and we'll see. We'll see where it goes. You know.
Well, you know, Bruce Springsteen is doing a one-man show on Broadway. Maybe you're gonna go see that show, and it's gonna inspire you.
Oh my God! You know, if my dad were still around, he would force me to go with him. Like that's a reality.
He might not, because tickets are very, very expensive. And I know this. I know this. Huh?
He would sell a kidney. I'm pretty confident. I don't think anything would stop him.
No, it's funny. My parents went, and it was actually a gift. It was my sister got it for them, because my sister and her husband, they were kind of just they were like among those people that like left San Francisco, you know, like they were up in San Francisco and they just kind of were like, this is getting ridiculous. So they just left San Francisco and just kind of spent time with each other, you know, like her in-laws and my parents. They just kind of went back and forth throughout the during the pandemic. Like they just kind of lived with parents for a while and just kind of worked from home. So, you know, not paying San Francisco rent for, a long time and not paying any rent for like a year and change, you know, they were able to save a little bit of money. So they got my parents a really nice thank you for everything and a nice, I don't know if it was for Father's Day or Mother's Day, but they got them tickets to Springsteen on Broadway. And it was like, they were like $400 a pop.
Jesus Christ, seriously? They were
not, they were not cheap.
No, sir.
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, you can see East Street for less than that. So just, I was like, I'll wait until he just does a rock show again. I don't need to be like, and I've seen him solo before too anyway, so.
Oh, nice.
I'm like, I don't need to see it. Watching the Netflix special was enough for me. I don't need to, see it. For that much money.
Always find bootlegs.
It was cheaper.
That's what my dad taught me. You can always find bootlegs on eBay or there's some kind of site or something. You find it. That's too much. I know Broadway is messed up right now. I don't really follow it, but my best friend is an actor and he wants to go see everything now that it's opening back up. And he, you know, was trying to get like the cheapest tickets possible. And it's insane. It's insane. The pricing out there. Just,
oh, I'm sure. I mean, I'm glad it's opening back up and we'll see what happens. I mean, but it might not be open for long, unfortunately.
I know. But, yeah. That is scary and it's coming.
It's very scary.
Coming up from the Gulf Stream. Hello. We're going to get it's going to come right up. The Delta variant is going to come right up with all those storms and shit. It's going to be, it's until we have the same rent, you know, eviction crisis that Florida and Texas is having. Right. Well, not you.
No. I mean, I feel you. I mean, it's still very, you know, rampant and it's still, and now hospitals are getting overwhelmed again and it's.
Yeah.
So I don't know when this thing's gonna end. Like I really don't, you know. I mean, it's like we're kind of just all in this together, and this is everybody's first pandemic, so we're just trying to figure it out the best we can. I mean,
what can we do, literally. All right, well, the student debt question, I win because I went to go to a master's program completely on student loans and now I have $100,000 in student loan debt from that. And I was two classes short of graduating when I had to move back to New Jersey to take care of my grandpa.
So you didn't finish?
So I didn't even finish.
Oh, no.
I benefit from all that shit.
Oh, no.
So hilarious. So it's so funny. I was really trying to get a job in the publishing industry, too. And then that's another thing that fucking died as I was in it, anyway. So...
Yeah.
Like it was just doomed from the beginning. And I actually went to be a children's librarian. And Forbes magazine declared the year that I went into my master's program that master's was the least profitable master's you could possibly get.
Oh no. So, what was it in? What was it in again?
To be a children's librarian, like in a school.
Oh.
Yeah, because they were also shutting down school programs everywhere and public libraries. And to like work at a public library, you get like $10 an hour, $11 an hour. And you need to have a master's degree to be a librarian.
It's so, and libraries are so important. Like libraries are, even in the technological age we live in, which it's amazing that we can have what we have at our fingertips. But even with all that, it's like libraries are still so essential in finding information and getting books and having all this stuff available to people free of charge. And the fact that like our society is going after libraries is straight up criminal. I mean, it is straight up. And Jeff Bezos is trying to eliminate libraries to like basically give Amazon like the control over all that. And,
and
of course, you know, they're always looking to defund libraries even more. And it's very, very problematic. I mean, before the pandemic, I was that guy that everybody would recognize and wave to at the library because I was in there so often. Now, I'm still just sort of using my Libby app now. I'm doing everything on Libby, but I can tell you I use that app constantly. So
I'm going to write that down. I don't know what that is.
Libby. Oh, Libby's amazing. It is literally, it's a library app. It's basically a digital library.
Sweet.
And you can read books like right on the app. Cause I don't have a Kindle, but like you can read books like right on the app. So as long as you don't mind reading on your phone, which at first I didn't like it, but I just got used to it. I just had to do it. Like during the pandemic, I was like, I can't go to the library. So I had to start doing it. So I just did. And now I'm used to it and I don't mind it. So,
yeah,
you know, like if you read on your phone, like you can totally just, I mean, now that's, and now I prefer it because, you know, my wife is, she's like a goes to bed earlier than me generally. And she's, you know, cause she has like a regular day job and stuff. And, so she goes to bed earlier than I do typically. And so if you're reading like an actual book, you have to have like the light on in bed, you know, but if I'm reading on my phone, she can have it totally dark. Cause I still just see the screen. So I'm like able to read that way. So
yeah. Yeah. I do that too. My girlfriend. And honestly, it makes me feel smarter because the page is really small and you can flip through them so fast.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The pages aren't actual like pages. Like you see, like when you see something and it's like only 200 pages, you're like, oh, that's a short one. Cause like the pages aren't regular pages.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So let's see. How many more questions do we have time for?
Can we one, do like two more or so?
Two more. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds great to me. Are you embarrassed to identify as a millennial?
No, not at all.
Really?
No, why would I be? I mean, I think all generations have like really cool things about them and really shitty things about them. I mean, there's a lot of awesome things about the boomers. There's a lot of really shitty things about the boomers. There's a lot of really awesome things about Gen X. There's a lot of really shitty things about Gen X. I think we're exactly the same in so many ways. I mean, yeah, like we are the generation that is just old, or some millennials at least, we're just old enough to remember the pre-internet world. Mm-hmm. And we evolved with it because like we were, you know, the early adapters because we were the young people like embracing these new technologies. So, you know, in so many ways, we are adapters. We have seen a lot of war in our lives. We have seen, you know, depression era level disparity through multiple waves. I mean, we know nothing but Reaganism politically, and that's why we're, you know, further and further left. And the Zoomers are even further left than us, which is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of ways, like it's not surprising. And again, I'm not trying to like overgeneralize or put down other generations or whatever. I mean, you know, again, it's like there's different things going on in all of them. But, you know, it wasn't surprising that generally it was the millennials who, when this thing happened, were like, all right, well, fuck it. We're going to bake bread. We're going to, you know, like go to our farmers markets. We're going to like we did all these things. Meanwhile, and again, this is generally, it was like the boomers and the Gen Xers who were like flipping out because they couldn't get B-dubs takeout, you know, for like a little bit. Meanwhile, we're just like, we're making bread and we're doing all these things. So no, I'm not ashamed to be a millennial. I don't think anyone should be ashamed of their generation. Nor do I think anyone should have some kind of excessive pride either. Because guess what? Your generation also did some shitty things. You know, when I look around at what's representing my generation politically and I see Pete Buttigieg and Joe Kennedy, I'm certainly not proud of that. I'm certainly embarrassed by that.
Yes.
So yeah, I think every generation has pros and cons. That really is the truth. And I think this next generation who, again, they have their pros and cons too, but I think they're really freaking inspirational. And I think it's amazing some of the things they're doing. The fact that socialism is not a dirty word to them at all.
Yes.
I'm excited for when they're in charge. I just hope it's not too late.
And I you know, that's something else about our generation that speaks to this question is that, you know, we are not like, we don't assume that we're going to be the leaders ever. Right. Well, you just said.
Right. I think so. I mean, I actually think it would be best if we just sort of skipped us. I think we're meant to do other things.
So, again, okay.
Well, again, it goes, I mean, look, we are still the end of a certain era. And the end of that era is where the Pete Buttigieg's, the Joe Kennedys, the Connor Lambs, that's where they all thrive. And so that's what I mean when I say, you know what, I think it'd be better, because the Zoomers, like they're not hearing that. They're like, yeah, no, fuck this. We need true systemic change. A lot of millennials are there too. I mean, hey, two of them are right here.
Right.
But I think politically, you know, we still haven't really seen those shifts. So I want it to happen as quick as possible. And if it's going to take a bunch of Zoomers just overwhelming everything to make that change happen, I'm for it. And I don't give a shit if that means less people from my generation get to be in public office. Who cares? I sure as hell don't, you know?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And, you know, me too. I'm happy to follow the Zoomers in a revolution. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
they can run faster than we can because they're younger. So we're behind you.
Literally anyone could run faster than me, but yes.
Well, we'll catch up to them. I mean, whatever. Like, we'll catch up. Like, we're running behind you. We're right with you.
I don't run. I always, when there's people walking down the street, like, and they're faster than me, like my friends and shit, I'm just like, I'll catch up with you at the stoplight. They call me grandma. It's cute. It's fine. So, yeah, I mean, my take on it is that I always thought that we were ashamed to consider ourselves millennials because, you know, when we were trying to get jobs, like right out of college, we were trying very hard not to be that millennial, right? Like, we were trying hard to show that we were not lazy, we're not entitled, we are here to work, and we're, you know, whatever, whatever. And we kind of bought the BS that was told about us so hard that we really do believe on some level that we're lazy and entitled. Like you just said, like, you can't wait, you know, you feel we're an end of an era. And you're probably not wrong about that, because when we grew up in a boom period, and we did have a taste of that. So, you know, I in some ways I agree with you. And there have been times when I have been embarrassed to identify as millennial because of the people that I was trying to fit in with. And actually, I was kind of interested to know, and I'm not here to you know, ask you about drama or stir up some shit or whatever, but I was kind of interested to know, like, is that something that ever came up with Jimmy? Like, when you guys started working together, like, was he particularly interested in you because you were a millennial voice, or is that just not, it's just, you're just good?
I mean, if that has something to do with it, he never expressed that. I mean, you know, like, he never told me that, like, he never said something like, oh, I need this. I mean, the way Jimmy's always been, at least in my interaction with him, is he just, you know, he brought me on the show and gave me a shot. And then he gave me a shot to start writing for him. And it just sort of blossomed from there. And he just liked, you know, like, he liked what I gave him, you know, and I think he's that way with everybody that, you know, works on that show. So yeah, I don't think, you know, my millennialness had anything to do with it. I mean, maybe it does. I think I'm no, because Aaron and Max, like, they're all millennials, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's other, you know, millennial regulars. I might have been the first one, but yeah, I mean, I write for the show, and I think I might be the only millennial writer for the show, maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm not even positive on that, to tell you the truth, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, we make jokes about it. Like, we'll joke, mm-hmm. like, sometimes if we're talking about something in the world, you know, like we'll make joke, like sometimes Jimmy or Steph will make a joke like, so as from the millennial perspective, what do you think? And you know, and it's also a little bit of a joke where it's like, Jimmy doesn't know a whole lot about music and I'm really into music. So sometimes if that comes up, like, we'll joke around about that. But yeah. Yeah. So.
I guess. Sure. No, I was just curious. I didn't think that it would have, you know, necessarily. It's just that, you know, I feel like, in the situations that I was in employment, I was always trying, again, you know, not to identify as a millennial and not to sort of, like, bring attention to it. So, yeah. So I don't know. That's cool. I'm glad to hear that you have that experience, because it's such a great.
Well, no, I see what you're saying too. Like, that makes a lot of sense, because, like, we did grow up in a boom period. So we were told what the world was going to be like.
Right.
And then we got out into it and the world was not that way. And I think there was that period where we kind of were like, well, what's wrong with us? We must just suck. But then eventually you realize the truth. And the truth was like, well, no, we didn't get the same chances. We didn't get the same chance that our parents had.
Yeah.
Like, we just didn't. And no. That's not, you know, like I'm not I'm not saying that to like put them down. It's not their fault. Well, it's some of their faults, but not, you know, like it's the Wall Street, you know, some of them are boomers and it is in fact their fault, a lot of it. But you know, it's not my parents' fault, it's not your parents' fault, you know. But yeah, like we just didn't get, and I think it's hard on all levels because I think that can lead to a lot of frustration. And I'm sure you've lived through some of this too, where it's like, you know, parents will try to give advice, but they're giving advice from the perspective where the last time they were in the job market, it was 1978. And, you know, it's just like, you know, you're kind of listening to that and you're like, yeah, this isn't really all that helpful. You know, so they're wondering what's wrong with you. You're wondering what's wrong with them, when in reality, you know, the world has just changed. And I heard somebody say this, and I forget who the person was. It was on a friend of mine, his podcast. He has a travel podcast because he like loves to travel. And he was interviewing this guy who's like big millennial guy. And, it's a comedian named Mike Siegel is the host of the podcast. Check it out. But,
cool.
He was talking to this guy who's a millennial who lives in Mexico. And the guy was saying, you know, the one thing that I'll criticize, you know, the generation before me for that I think they might have gotten wrong, and you know, the boomers and the Gen Xers alike, is, you know, we know that it's a different world. And one thing that wasn't very common is, hey, maybe you should do something different than we did. Maybe you should do, you know, like we grew up in an era where it was very common to just kind of stay in your hometown, find a job and just get a white, you know, get a house and a white picket fence. Maybe your goals should be a little different. I'm not saying like you can't still have a family or a house even, but maybe, you know, maybe your path's not quite the same, and maybe that's okay. And maybe that should even be embraced to an extent as much as it can be. There was never that moment where societally the previous generation said, hey, you live in a different world, so embrace a different path. You have to. And I think that's, I think that was a mistake, and it was a mistake on us, on our part too, to listen. You know what I mean? Like it was a mistake on our part. And I've tried to, you know, I've tried to kind of live my life that way to the best of my ability. And part of it is just what I wanted to, you know, do with my life. But, you know, I kind of was like, I don't want to stay in my hometown. I want to explore the country and even the world for that matter. I almost moved to Italy at one point. Sometimes I regret not doing it, but you know, like, you know, I've lived in the Northwest. I've lived in Nashville, Tennessee. I went to college out of state. I went to Indiana University. You know, I live in Southern California now. I like having a relatively nomadic lifestyle. I liked it for a lot of years. I still kind of embrace it to an extent, although it's not as easy because, you know, I'm married now. So it's not just me. It's like, yeah, you know, the wife and the cat, you know, they get a vote too. So yeah. And plus I love my neighborhood, so I'm not looking to go anywhere anytime soon, but I do, you know, kind of embrace, just rolling with what society gives you. And now more than ever, that's, you don't have a choice. Cause I mean, it's like, and it's very hard. I mean, you know, not being able to tour is hard. It breaks my heart. It really does. And I don't even know if our tour this fall will happen. I'm hoping it does. I really, as long as it's safe, I'll be there. But if it's not safe, you know, we're going to have to cancel again.
Right.
Just the thought of it is heartbreaking. But, you know, I kind of look at it this way. Like, I'm just like, you know, my two favorite things in the world, like the greatest feeling in the world is just, you know, being with my wife and my cat. You know what I mean? Like that's like the bee's knees. That's like the top, you know? And, the next best thing in the world, as far as feelings are concerned, is performing live. There's nothing fucking like it in the world. It's amazing. It's amazing. And so I'm like, well, if I can't have that second best thing for a while, I love having both things in my life.
Yeah.
But if I can't have that second best thing, well, then I'm just going to really focus on that first best thing. You know, and I already told my wife, I'm like, look, if this tour doesn't happen, we're going to go on a boat trip or something. Not a cruise, mind you.
No.
That's very dangerous right now. But maybe not even a boat trip. I'm just like, you know, just pulled this out of my butt. But like, my point, like, we're going to do something special that is safe and possible to do. We're going to do something special if this freaking tour doesn't happen, because it's going to be very, very emotionally sad. And so we're going to do something special to, you know, to try to make up for it a little bit and to compensate. So that's just like what I've absolved myself to, you know what I mean? Like I just kind of, I accept it. And I'm like, you know, someday we will get through this. I am, you know, these people who say like, oh, we're never going to get, we are going to get through this. It is going to be a thing. I think COVID will be kind of an endemic. Like, I think it will be around, but we won't have it the way we do, you know, like we'll reach, you know, whether it be like, you know, the vaccines will continue to be distributed. So it'll just lessen, you know, the cases will be less and less for people, or, you know, we'll acquire some amount of, it'll just be like a flu basically. And, you know, there might be shots every year or something. I don't know exactly how that'll unfold, but it won't be a pandemic basically. And it, like, we will get through it. You know, I'm not one of these people who like, we're not going to get through it. We are going to get through it.
Yeah.
It's taken longer than it should, I think. I mean, I think we should be done with this by now, but we're not. And there's a lot of factors going on there around the entire world. But we will get through it. And I'm just like, when we do, I'll, you know, be back to doing more shows on the road, you know, and, you know, in the meantime, hopefully this fall happens, but we'll take it one day at a time and do what we got to do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all we can do. Absolutely. That's awesome. Well, do we need to wrap up?
Yeah, let's go ahead and wrap it up.
Okay, cool. So I was keeping score, and I am a more stereotypical millennial than you.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Okay.
I got 4 points and you only got one. I gave you one because one of my questions was, have you ever lived on your parents or at your parents or on your parents' couch? And then you said you had. So I gave you one for that.
Did you ask that? I don't even remember that.
I didn't actually ask it, but I wanted to. So I was, I gave it to you. Okay.
Well, yeah, technically I guess, yeah, I think the answer would be yes for me, because again, when I just didn't have a home and was just like doing comedy, you know, like, cause I was just traveling 45 weeks a year. So it got to the point where I was just like, why should I freaking pay rent anywhere? And when I had long amounts of downtime, I would go to my parents' place for like extended periods of time. So yeah, I feel like that tracks. I'm a yes to that.
Yeah, word. I gave it to you. So cool. So I am a more stereotypical millennial, so I win, but you win more because you beat the stereotypes and you're embodying the type of millennial that I would like to see more in the media. So
Well, the media is not going to tell the truth anyway. So,
well, the indie media will, and that's why we got to support each other. And shout out to the Indie Left News, who I know you did the theme song for. They are awesome.
Yeah.
Go take a look at them. They every day they list all of the top videos from Indie Leftist sources. So take a look at them and follow them and uplift everyone. Absolutely. Let's do that. Sure. So give me some plugs.
Where can you please check out my movie trailer. And, you know, if you are interested in seeing this film become a reality, you can go to GoFundMe.com and just type in Left at Wall. It's the first thing that comes up. And if you can contribute, that's great. But even if you can't, like, hey, share it on your social media, tell your friends, you know, really excited about this project. You can also find it on my Twitter at Ron Placone. It's my pinned tweet. And you can also find it on my YouTube channel, which is just YouTube, Ron Placone. Bunch of tour dates are up at my website, ronplacone.com. Again, you can go ahead and get tickets. We've already, you know, planned out in advance that if we need to make changes, we'll be able to get everybody refunded as quickly as possible. So hopefully it happens and we see a bunch of you this fall. If it doesn't, we'll see you when this is all over. but yeah, so romplicone.com for tour dates. Yeah, that's pretty much me. You can get my show, Get Your News On with Rom, wherever you get audio podcasts, or of course on my YouTube or Rockfin, because it's available in audio and video form. And peace. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you so much for being here. This has been great.
Thank you.
Yeah, great. Okay, I'm gonna stop recording. You may have noticed that I don't do live streams. It's a lot, and I'm like one person, okay? But I would still love to be able to uplift your voices the way that live streamers do, by highlighting your chats or your indie businesses, because I know how hard it is for a millennial out here, and I'm happy to share my platform with people who support me. If you would like to see your comment or small business promo scrolling at the bottom of my screen, then go to ko-fi.com/millensplain and buy me a coffee for $3. If you would like to ask me a question and actually get a response, then buy me 2 coffees at $6 and I will put your question in my next Q&A episode. If you would like to insult me, I can take it. I got a thick skin. And honestly, I have a good sense of humor as well. Like my upcoming Q&A episodes, I will be doing special insult episodes. So if you would like to see your insult on my insult highlight reel episode and possibly get one back, then please buy me 2 coffees for $6. Then I'll be more than happy to clap back. Listen, I've been through hard times myself. And if you're really, really struggling and trying to start a business, if you need mutual aid help, you can always message me on Twitter or at melensplain@gmail.com, and I will try to help you. That goes for anybody who needs to escape a bad situation, to anybody trying to start a small business. It's important to me that I lift up all of our voices and not just mine. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, this is my second side hustle. I love being able to speak out on these issues, but the reality of the situation is, in this capitalist hell that we live in, if I don't make any money from doing this, then I have to stop doing it altogether. Right now, living paycheck to paycheck for me doesn't actually even cut it. That's why I need your help. I don't have a Patreon. I can't offer you more content than what I put out publicly. I don't have the time, I don't have the money, and I don't have the energy. If you want to see more content and you want special member features, you have a PayPal account that you can donate to, then support me and together we can make it happen. If not, I will fade away into the ether. As always, for all my links, please go to melensplain.com. Thank you.